For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Before we get to today's morning show interview, I want to mention that tomorrow's morning show podcast is going to feature something very special, an interview that dates all the way back to the mid to late 1990s, and an interview done by my predecessor on the program, longtime news director Bill Guy, a conversation in which he invited into our studios two local judges, Mary Wagner and Emily Miller, to talk about their experience as judges. When I think back to Bill's many interviews over the years, this was among his very, very favorites. And I recently uncovered the cassette tape of the interview, and we'll be sharing it tomorrow on the podcast version of the program. And on Sunday's podcast, a really fun interview from 2003 with author Don Venata, author of First Off the Tee, Presidential Hackers, Duffers, and Cheaters from Taft to Bush, a look at the connection between U.S. presidents and the game of golf. That can be heard on Sunday's podcast. To subscribe to the Morning Show podcast, to hear the Morning Show 7 days a week, look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. The podcast can be found at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now today's Morning Show interview, which I hope you will enjoy. And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am speaking with a champion on today's program and his proud parents as well. The champion in question, one Ben Kaczynski, who just graduated from Oak Creek High School and back in February scored an amazing win, earning state championship status. I mean, the champion wrestler for the whole state of Wisconsin in the 285 weight class. But last week he went one better than that and became a national champion at 285 pounds at the Junior Freestyle Nationals. And so Ben Kaczynski is joining us on the morning show along with his proud parents, Rob and Pam. And I want to make sure that I explain why I even know Ben Kaczynski. I know Ben because a few years ago, when I think he was still in middle school, Ben actually performed at the Racine Theater Guild in our production of Mary Poppins. And I really enjoyed working with Ben. He was a fine young singer and actor, really quiet, really polite, really hardworking. And never in a million years would I have dreamt that in his future was this spectacular success as a wrestler. I mean, he was a fine looking young man, but not exactly the beast that he has become, and particularly the beast or the, I mean, in fact, one of the commentators for his final match called him a killer in the best sense of the word. And he indeed, by defeating the top ranked wrestler in the country in his weight class, Ben Kaczynski, as an unranked wrestler, scored what is arguably the biggest upset and most gratifying triumph of all of these national championships. So I'm glad we can have this conversation today to talk about this and the long path that has led to this wonderful success. So Ben Kaczynski and Rob and Pam Kaczynski, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Glad that you can be here. Thanks for making time for this conversation. So, Ben, are you still on cloud nine, or have you come back down to earth a little bit?
Come back down a little bit. It's still surreal, still feels like a dream, but back to my old self.
Right. Remind us where these nationals were taking place. I mean, where did these dramatic matches take place?
They were in Fargo, North Dakota.
Fargo, North Dakota. And Pam and Rob, were you able to be in Fargo, or did you have to kind of follow this at a distance?
Oh, we were there.
Definitely there. Wouldn't have missed it.
Wonderful. So all the excitement was in Fargo, and we'll talk through what happened in the final tournament in just a little bit. Ben, it would be great to get a sense from you of just how long you have been an avid wrestler. And we should also underscore the fact that this is not the only sport that you do. You're also, I know for a fact, a really, really fine football player as well. Maybe let's start by kind of tracing your athletic career. Where did your athletic endeavors begin, and at what point did wrestling become a really important part of it?
I started wrestling in the sixth grade, and it didn't really become my entire life basically until I'd say sophomore year of high school when I started training at the Aspen Wrestling Academy. And I played football until my junior year, and then I dropped it so that I could be my best in wrestling and become a state champ and win these national title.
What drew you to wrestling at the tender age of sixth grade? Were you following, for instance, in the footsteps of your dad or someone else in your family or anybody else that you knew had done this and enjoyed it?
My brother, he told me, "Hey, wrestling would be good for you." And I was still like, "Hey, I don't know. It's wrestling, wrestling's got that bad thing about it." And I was like, "I don't know. I don't really know if I want to do this." And then my gym teacher at the time, Coach Parr, he talked to me and said, "Hey, you should really try out for this because both of his kids wrestle." I was like, "You know what? I'll give it a shot, see what happens." And didn't think it would take me here, but here I am.
Here you are. So, Rob and Pam, what do you remember about Ben's first venture into the world of wrestling? And is that something you were cheering him on to do?
Well,
A little, yeah.
yes, we were cheering him once he decided he was going to do it. It took me a little bit to say, wrestling's kind of a dangerous sport. I've heard of a lot of injuries, and I know of somebody personally who was paralyzed from a wrestling accident. So
Wow.
that gave me a little bit of fear. But eventually I got over that and just became his number one fan.
That your position too, Rob?
Pretty much. I mean, it was fun to watch him kind of grow. I mean, when he started out, he was, what were you at, 160 or
129.
oh, 129. So, I mean, and he was didn't have much as far as muscles or anything, and watching him kind of grow and learn the sport, that was probably the biggest thing, because he knew very little about it going in, so it was a learning experience.
Yeah. So, Ben, what are your most vivid memories of those very first times that you were on the mat? I mean, and I don't mean your first competitions, but just the very first practices where you were just learning the sport of wrestling from the ground up. I mean, did you take to it really easily and naturally right from the start, or was it kind of a struggle in the early going?
Well, I did taekwondo growing up, and I was pretty decent at taekwondo. We did jiu-jitsu and groundwork, so that was solid already going into wrestling. So I had that kind of background. But I came in, and I was 129. I was a pudgy kid and didn't have much muscles, so wasn't really strong and got beat up a lot in practice. Had people beating me up a lot, but it made me stronger and grew me as a wrestler.
Wow. One of the things that's interesting for me, Ben, is that when I remember working with you at the Racine Theater Guild, you just seemed like the sweetest, nicest, most polite kid, and not that a great wrestler can't be all of those things, but I'm not sure it works real well to be nice and sweet and polite out on the mat. I mean, it seems like there has to be kind of another temperament that's part of you in order to accomplish what you've accomplished out on the wrestling mat. So, I mean, have you always had kind of these two sides to you, the soft-spoken, polite young man who becomes this other kind of person up out on the mat? Or did that develop as you wrestled?
It's developed definitely as I've wrestled, but it's like when you shake hands with them and the whistle blows, that's when you need to turn it on. And after the match, you can shake their hands, tell them good match, be polite again.
Right. And of course, even when you're wrestling, you know, there's still rules to follow. You can't be a beast. You have to, and of course you can be perfectly gentlemanly and a great competitor, but obviously you have developed a really fierce hunger for winning and have managed to do that. So how long did it take before you started to really become successful on the wrestling mat, where you started to feel really comfortable and started winning more often than you were losing?
In eighth grade, I had made it to the youth state tournament and I was looking like I was going to place, but then I got really sick and couldn't compete the second day of the tournament.
Wow.
And then, I get to high school and it was a whole big transition. So I was back to having a losing record because now I'm wrestling pretty much grown men, I'd say. And, I also hopped up from 160 to 182 going into my freshman year. And then I'd say sophomore year is when I started getting good. I had a record of 44-7.
Wow.
And started actually beating people, made it to the state tournament and placed.
Cool. Pam, you mentioned your fears as he started out. Did those fears begin to ease off? I mean, the fear of Ben, you know, suffering some kind of serious injury in the course of wrestling, or does that sort of motherly fear never really go away?
Well, no, it really doesn't ever go away. You're always afraid of it. And I happened to be Matt's side when he was injured. Here I go.
Sorry. It's okay.
When he was injured in the state tournament, and was that your junior year?
Yeah.
Junior year, he got very injured with his ankle. And I happened to be outside taking pictures and not being able to run out and see him was hard.
But yeah. Those motherly instincts, they're as powerful as anything. Yeah.
But he's a tough cookie now. I don't worry so much about it now, but I do, you know, I'll see him get tweaked a little. I'll go, oh no, he tweaked his knee, or oh, I hope that wasn't his knee, or I hope it wasn't his ankle, or that kind of thing. But it's not quite as bad as when he first started. When the kids first start, they, like in middle school, their bodies are so limber, they twist in ways that are unnatural. And it just, as a mom, you just cringe because you know their necks and their arms and their shoulders shouldn't be doing that. But as he got bigger and put on more muscles and was more muscular than lean muscle, or like than limber, I didn't see that, so it didn't get quite as bad.
Ah, wow. Well, we'll talk in a moment about that injury, because I remember hearing about that and hoping that you were going to come back from it, which of course you have. For those of you just joining us, we're speaking with Ben Kaczynski and his parents, Rob and Pam. Ben recently scored an amazing triumph at the National Junior Freestyle Nationals in Fargo, North Dakota. And he ended up being the national champion at the 285-pound division. And he upset the nation's number one ranked wrestler in that division to take the title in a really incredible match, which we'll be talking about in just a moment. Ben, one of the things that I think people that aren't wrestlers might not fully understand is this whole matter of weight divisions, that you know, you don't have 99-pound wrestlers wrestling 199-pound wrestlers, that it is a sort of weighted array of divisions in which you compete, and the division in which you wrestle at has to do with how much you weigh. Can you just help us understand how those kind of decisions get made about at what weight you will wrestle, at what weight you are likely to be the most effective, And is that a decision that you make or that your coach makes or that you make together? And is that ever kind of a complicated decision to make?
I know for me, I started my freshman year weighing about 175. So I went in the 182 weight class. And I've always been able to choose what weight class I was going to go to. So I'd gain weight, go to 95, gain weight, go to 220. Then my senior year, I'd gain more weight and went heavyweight. But I know there are some coaches out there that'll tell their kids what weight they are supposed to go. And it happens, but kids often cut a lot of weight, but I'm not the kind that has ever cut weight. I've always just gained it and went to the next weight class above and been the best I can be there.
Right. I suppose it's a really tricky choice because when you are cutting weight, you're probably losing muscle or just losing weight literally, and that makes a difference in terms of how your body feels and how you're going to dominate another wrestler versus gaining weight, if that's the right kind of weight. But then you're taking on potentially wrestlers who are even a few pounds heavier than you are. But you always like the idea of climbing weight divisions rather than holding yourself back.
Yeah, I like the challenge. I like to change weight class, see how I can do at different weights. I like that.
I think one of the challenges of wrestling is that as you grow up, as you change, as you physically mature, as you become larger, it's your own body that starts to feel a little bit different, and matters like just plain old balance and coordination and so on, that all changes as the body changes, as you become, turn from a boy to a man and so on. Has that been an issue for you at all, or by and large, have you throughout this felt really comfortable in your body and not had to make too many big adjustments?
Yeah, when I moved up to heavyweight, I needed to get used to being in the bigger body because I jumped up from weighing 202 pounds to weighing 240 pounds. So I had to get used to moving around in a bigger body. And it took a little bit, but I got there and got comfortable with it.
Wow. One of the things that's interesting about, for instance, comparing wrestling and football, and what was your position in football?
I was on the line.
On the line. So, of course, football is a team sport where your own success or lack of success has a whole lot to do with the guys that you're playing with. And when the quarterback throws an interception, it's maybe not his fault. It might be the receiver's fault or the line's fault or nobody's fault. But it has a lot to do with your teammates, and nobody scores their successes alone. Wrestling, of course, you're also part of a team, and yet it's obviously a solo sport. Nobody else is out there on the mat with you except your opponent. Can you just say a word about that solitary nature of wrestling versus more of a standard team sport like football, and what that feels like to you as a competitor?
It's pretty cool. When you're out there, if you lose, you can't blame on anybody else but yourself. Well, in football, when you lose, there's plenty of things that could go wrong. Someone on the opposite side of the field could happen and not even be your fault, and you still end up losing. So I like that about wrestling. I like the, hey, I can do this. I can score points for my team and not have to worry about someone else goofing it up. It's all on me. I like that.
Right. Do your teammates matter to you? I mean, they're not out on the mat with you, but are there other ways in which being part of a team in a sport like wrestling makes a difference for you?
100%. When you got your teammates behind you on mat side and you hit a big throw or a big takedown and they're over there going, two, and screaming and yelling, it definitely hypes you up and gets you ready to go.
Very good. As you have ascended through the ranks and improved, who have some of the most important mentors been for you, mentors and coaches that have kind of helped guide you?
There's been a lot. I've had my dad, obviously, and my parents, my mama, and then my coaches at Oak Creek, Coach Knackle, Coach Majors, and Coach Perdone. They've all helped me a lot. And Somerville, who is my neighbor, he was my original coach at Oak Creek, but he retired after my freshman year and still has mentored me since then. And then I have my club coaches, Jordan Newman, Ben Askren, Max Askren, Coach Savage, and all the other coaches that pop in there, Josh, all of them. I owe it all to all my coaches. They've all been real helpful and been my mentors.
Cool. So generally speaking, when you're in a wrestling practice and your coaches are watching you and commenting on what you're doing, what are the sorts of things that they are commenting on? What sort of technical matters, I suppose, are they coaching you in to do better? What kinds of things?
Well, they can see what I can't because I'm in the match and they're outside. So they can see, hey, your level needs to be lower. They're getting in on this shot. Your right foot's forward when you're reaching with your right hand. You need to close the gap more, stuff like that.
So you made this really wonderful, exciting ascension through the ranks. And then, as your mom reminded all of us, you suffered a dramatic and really, really serious injury. At the risk of making you relive something not very pleasant, can you tell us exactly what happened and what you remember about that moment when that injury occurred?
Yeah, I was in the fifth place match for state my junior year. And he had got behind me, went for a mat return, went to trip my foot, but my foot planted and I rolled over the top of it, tearing the ligaments in my ankle. And originally they thought I broke my tibia, which was not ideal to hear that. And I wanted to go back out there and wrestle, but the trainers wouldn't let me. So we went to the hospital. They told me the ligaments were torn. I had to be in a boot for 6 weeks, which was tough because I'm the kind of guy, if I lose, I want to get back in the gym and keep working. So I couldn't really do much. I had to focus on upper body. And then shortly after COVID happens, everything shut down.
So that created a huge hiatus for you, even more than what was otherwise the case. Yeah. How hard was it to follow your doctors and trainers' instructions in terms of taking care of this and not getting back too quickly, too prematurely? How hard was that for you?
It was really hard. I was itching to get back to wrestling, but all I could really do was lift upper body lifts, and it was really starting to wear on me that I just want to wrestle. And then of course COVID is happening, so I can't even, when I do get out of the boot, I can't get in to wrestle. So I was pretty down in the dumps, but I knew I had to do something, work out, get my mind straight. And it ended up working out for the better with COVID. It allowed me to take a break and not rush the comeback. But when stuff started opening up back up again, the first thing I did was wrestle.
not a surprise. So I have a feeling, Pam and Rob, that you probably had to play an important kind of parental role in keeping Ben in kind of the right place mentally and emotionally through this, all of this frustration. I suspect that wasn't too easy.
Well, it actually, I mean, it wasn't easy for him, but because of COVID, a lot of things weren't happening. So it was easier to get him to just stick to what he needed to get better. You know, had COVID not hit, there were tournaments that either he would have tried to get into or whatever. And, you know, that would have been a lot harder.
Yeah, so, possibly injuring it more.
Right.
And then he wouldn't be where he is today.
Wow. So when did you get to be able to wrestle again? When did the curtain of COVID lift enough that it was possible to start practicing again and competing again?
I'd say it was about
December or January.
It was about 2 weeks after I was out of the boot. I get a text from my coach saying, hey, we're doing small groups at Askren. Would you want to come in? And I said, absolutely. Count me in. So I remember being in the wrestling room and only having four kids there and working out. It was fun, though. We got some good work in.
And things felt okay? You felt like your injury was behind you, or did you have to be really careful and cautious in the early going?
No, I felt good. My injury, I didn't really feel any pain in my ankle. I had a brace on, obviously, to keep support on it, but that was about it.
Wow. So as I mentioned towards the top of the interview, in February, you became state champion, and it had been some years since your high school had had a state champion in wrestling. So it was a very, very sweet victory, I'm sure. Was that an expected triumph for you, or was it to any extent a surprise?
Going into the year, I was ranked number one at heavyweight, so I was expected to win the tournament. So it was still a big deal for me, because I've never won a state title and I really wanted it. And it was the first in 29 years from Oak Creek.
Wow. Well, and the other thing is, if you go in ranked number one, you go in with a big target on your back. I mean, all these other wrestlers, and you are feeling more pressure than anybody. So what kind of a triumph did this represent for you to withstand all that pressure, all those expectations?
It was a big deal for me, because I had never done it. Oak Creek hadn't done it in 29 years, but I had all this support saying I can do it, and I wanted to prove everybody right and prove the people that didn't think I could do it wrong.
Right. What's so interesting is this amazing triumph at Nationals was a very different scenario in which you were not ranked. You were completely under the radar. First of all, were you surprised and even kind of angry to not be ranked, or did it make sense that you were not ranked at Nationals going in?
Going in, I knew I wasn't ranked. I wouldn't say I was angry or anything. I just wanted to prove myself really badly. I wanted to say, hey, I should be one of the top wrestlers here. I want to prove myself.
Right. So explain how the Nationals in Fargo were laid out. That is, what kind of a gauntlet are we talking about that you and your fellow competitors had to follow?
We started in a 128-man bracket, and we had 3 days of competition. The first day, we did the 128 round, which I had a bye into the round of 64, and then we did the round of 64 and the round of 32. And then the next day, we did the round of 16, the quarterfinals and the semifinals, and the final day we did the finals.
Wow. Those 128 wrestlers competing, so for instance, there were 128 285-pound wrestlers.
Yeah.
I mean, you had essentially that many people vying for the title that you eventually won. How did those 128 wrestlers get to Fargo, and how did you get to Fargo? Did you get there on the strength of being a state champion?
I'm assuming it's different in every state, but as far as Wisconsin goes, we had the freestyle state championships, and I won that, and that assured me a spot in the lineup to go to Fargo. But the other people that came from Wisconsin for heavyweight, there's a wrestle-offs if there's too many people signed up for a weight, because we're only allowed to bring 6 people per weight class. And if there's more than that want to come, they need to wrestle off for it. But since I won state, I assured my spot on the team.
Cool. So when you are at Fargo, who are you primarily with? I mean, are you with other wrestlers from Wisconsin? I mean, are you part of sort of a Wisconsin team? Or are you there essentially kind of on your own with whatever coaches and loving parents are with you?
Yeah, I was there with Team Wisconsin, where we traveled as a team, we got there as a team, we left as a team, we stayed in the same hotel, and we were a team.
Very good. The world of wrestling, how much do you know your competitors? I mean, aside from the handshake and one or two words you might say to each other out on the mat, is there much opportunity and even interest in actually getting to know other wrestlers from other parts of the country and so on? Or by and large, did that just not happen too much?
Well, when you're on the mat with someone and you go 6 minutes with someone wrestling, you tend to earn some respect for that person. And then sometimes you'll get to chatting after the match and talk, but sometimes they don't want to talk to you. And I'm the kind of guy who I'll talk to you no matter who you are. It doesn't matter how. So cool. It's yes and no. You learn something about some people and you don't learn much about other people.
I was glad that your mom pointed out something that I did not know about how things went in Fargo, namely that you had one match where you were in at least what appears to be fairly serious danger of losing, where you were significantly behind and came back with an incredibly decisive victory. At what point in the competition did this particular match occur, and can you tell us about it?
This was in the round of 16, my first match of the second day. And I was on the stage for the first time in the competition, the big elevated stage where everybody can see you. And at the end of the first period, I'm down 7-2. And my coaches tell me, hey, you're fine. You got this. Keep your conditioning, level low, keep moving, you'll gas them out. And sure enough, exactly what he said came true. And I came back to an 18-7.
I don't understand the little phrase you said. Did you say you would gas him out?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Basically saying that my conditioning was better than his. I could make him more tired than I am.
So he would run out of gas before you would then?
Yeah.
Wow. Do you feel like you were behind in part because you were nervous to be on this big stage? Or was it or was he just wrestling super, super well and surprising you?
It was definitely a little bit of both. I was really nervous going into the match because first time on a big stage in the tournament, and he came out really strong, kept pushing me out and using his weight to his advantage. But then I got my nerves in check and came back ready to fight.
Right. That you did, and you ended up winning. Robin, Pam, what was it like for you to be in the stands and seeing Ben in this rather precarious position? Or were you just calm and collected and certain that he would pull it out?
Well, I'm usually not ever calm and collected when he's out there wrestling. I'm one of those very loud wrestling moms. I tend to yell a lot. Go Ben, or no, don't get in position, or various things like that. But I was definitely concerned because I knew how bad he wanted to get to the finals to meet up with this national champion that was there, this Chase Horn. I knew he wanted to have that match, and so I was nervous for him in that respect. Although I think his father and I have more confidence in him than he's had in many years. I think he's just finally getting to learn now that he really does have what it takes to be this national champion. We've all seen it in him beforehand.
Right.
But he needs to learn it in his head.
Well, you do end up, as you already said, coming back to score very decisively 18-7. So in fact, your opponent never scored another point on you. I mean, after that early lead, it was you all the way, very decisively. And you have a couple of other victories then in the wake of that that ultimately bring you to the final. Were there any other bumps in the road, or except for this particular match, was it in a sense smooth sailing to the final?
In the semifinals, it was a tough match. He came out early and scored on me. And I believe I was down by 2. And then I came back to eventually beat him 12-2.
Wow. That set up this confrontation with someone your mom has already mentioned, namely the number one ranked wrestler in the country in your weight division, a young man from Georgia by the name of Chase Horn. I'm pretty sure you had never wrestled him before. Had you met him before or seen him wrestle, or did you have any way to kind of know anything specific about what kind of wrestler he was besides just being really, really good? that would be helpful for you in confronting him?
I had seen him wrestle a lot. He's been at a lot of big tournaments. He was at Who's Number One. He was at Super 32 in the finals. And I knew about him, but I never got to wrestle him. And I talked to him before I wrestled him at Fargo. And we chatted a bit. But that's all, really. Mm.
Nice guy?
Yeah, he's a really nice guy.
Cool. Well, that has nothing to do with who wins or loses in the final. So we have this. So going into the final, having seen him wrestle, did you have a really specific game plan, a certain strategy in terms of how you might possibly come out on top?
The original game plan was to keep it close and finish at the end and try and get something at the end or remain in the slight lead at the end. I knew he was going to come out there with a really powerful underhook, and I knew he was really good in that position, so I knew I wanted to kind of stay out of that underhook position. And then things changed when I started getting the lead and started noticing that he was getting tired. I was like, okay, maybe I don't need to keep it close. I can pull away a little bit.
So in other words, the strategy about keeping it close was to, in a sense, not take a lot of risks, to be careful and just hold on to maybe a 2-point lead or a 4-point lead. But then you start to get a sense that you can carry this, you can take this match away from him even more decisively, which is ultimately, of course, what you did. What was the final score?
12-4.
So at 12-4, Ben Kaczynski over Powers Chase Horn, the number one ranked wrestler at 285. And takes this this national title. I heard you say in an interview not long after the match that you felt like you had a little bit of a chip on your shoulder, or I don't know if you use those words or the interviewer used those words, but you know, I think that can be valuable for a competitor, but sometimes having a chip on your shoulder can get in your way. I mean, that can lead you to be maybe reckless or foolish or whatever. How would you characterize your mindset through this tournament, particularly as you were finally confronting Chase Horn, and how big a chip was on your shoulder?
I took it one match at a time. I was like, hey, this guy first, Chase Horn. I knew Chase Horn was probably going to make to the finals, and I kept working an inch of my way to get to the finals so I could eventually wrestle him, because he was who I trained for. He was who I wanted to beat because he's the number one guy in the nation. So I took it one step at a time, one match at a time, and I had something to prove. I wanted to not just get to the finals. I wanted to make a statement and make it very clear that I was one of the best in the nation.
Hmm. Well, I'd say you emphatically made that point. Robin, Pam, what was it like for you to be in the stands and to see Ben achieve this incredible triumph?
It was unbelievable. I mean, we had all the faith in the world in him, but he still has to do what he has to do to get it done. And I think both of us think that he's his biggest competition, you know, so we all realize how good he is. He finally, I believe, realized how good he was and was able to show.
Pam, anything you want to add about the mother's perspective in the stands at a moment like this?
Well, it was exciting to say the least. Hearing his name announced and see him come out of that fog, it was just like emotions came over me and I just popped up and started screaming, ah, that's my boy, that's my boy, that's my boy. And then as he got closer to the end where time was running out, you know, of course I was right there when things weren't exactly going his way. Don't do that, Ben, get out of there. Don't get caught in that. Oh, you know, and you'd say these little prayers in your head. And then when he started pulling away and I saw the time ticking away, of course the tears were flowing like waterfalls out of my eyes. Couldn't help that. But then when it got close, and Rob has it on one of his videos of Ben's match, I'm there going, all right, 10, 9, 3, 2, 1. Just screaming and yelling and, oh my God, he did it. He did it. He did it. He finally did it. He finally did it. He got his wish. So yeah, it's just a whole host of emotions. And then you cry and then you laugh and then you're apologizing to the person next to you because you're sitting practically on their lap. You're so excited.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, I didn't get to hear any of that. I watched the kind of professionally done video, but so I'm not catching all of that. But the announcers were talking about how they were amazed at the huge ovations, the cheering for Ben through the course of this match, particularly from a large Wisconsin contingent, but probably also for a lot of other people who didn't even know Ben, but were kind of thrilled at the prospect of the number one ranked wrestler being knocked off by an unranked challenger. So, I mean, everybody who loves competition loves that kind of thing. And that has to be incredible. So, Ben, you've secured this marvelous victory at Nationals. You are a national champion, and you are going to keep wrestling. Tell our listeners, at least right now, what your plans are for the fall.
I plan to go to UW La Crosse and be an Eagle with Coach Malachek and Coach Needham. And I really got a family there. So I want to go there because I got my friends that I got friends going up there with me. I got friends that are already up there. I already built a family atmosphere there. And they have the perfect physical therapy program for me. And wrestling is still there. I'd say we'll win a national title as a team in the next coming years in lacrosse.
Wow. Well, that would be a cool thing. Pam and Rob, I think one of the things that you probably want to say is that you're really proud of Ben, not just for being a national champion as a wrestler, but also a lot of other things about him that make you really proud. I'm assuming, among other things, that Ben's been a diligent student along the way. And that this is probably a good example that you can set for other parents of wrestlers and parents of other athletes, that there are other things to be paying attention to. Has that ever been a struggle with Ben, or by and large has Ben been the kind of diligent student you wanted him to be?
Well, he's always been pretty well-rounded. I mean, wrestling is his passion, but he also knows that in order to get to the good schools and the occupation that he wants to succeed in, he needs to keep his grades up. And he did so. He did very well at that. But he also, besides being a wrestler, branched out and did many other things to round himself out, like his football, for instance. And besides that, he did, well, as you said, RTG. He was in the drama programs and
The Eagle Scout,
the
track.
He did track for a while. He did cross country for a while. He did soccer and powerlifting. He actually made a personal record in powerlifting. What was it you lifted that
500 pounds?
500 pounds in powerlifting and a 500-pound
Wow.
And unfortunately, he did make it to state to compete, but that was after the injury, so was not able to compete at state in powerlifting. So that was another thing that got blown out for him, but he made his personal record of doing 500 pounds. And I was in the stands, and it quite frankly looked quite easy for him. I was impressed. Wow. I was like, wow, he doesn't even look like he's trying.
So Ben, it sounds like you made a really good decision in that. I think what we hear a lot about with young athletes is that there's more and more a drive to specialize, you know, whether it's tennis or basketball or football or whatever, that more and more athletes are narrowing their focus. And of course, to some extent you did that in terms of stepping away from football for your senior year. But it sounds like you've made other choices that have tried to kind of counterbalance your otherwise single-minded focus on wrestling, because that focus can really lead to burnout and other issues, physical and otherwise. So what would your advice be for others? I mean, do you feel like you've made a really good array of choices in terms of having the right amount of focus?
Yeah, I'd say you can't just say my life is wrestling, because your life is more than that. Because then if you lose, it hurts you a lot more deeply. Like, you're not going to be able to bounce back as easily if you say my life is wrestling. If you have other stuff like family or faith or something, you're going to be more easily say, all right, that sucked. Yeah, but we can bounce back from it.
Wow. That's I've never heard anybody phrase it quite that way. And that's a really beautiful way to put it. And it keeps everything in perspective. And in a sense, even this wonderful triumph that you've just enjoyed as national champion, that's also something to kind of keep in perspective along with all the other things that are important in your life. So very cool. Well, it has been really wonderful to hear all about this incredible triumph. And I suspect your parents are going to be making a lot of trips to lacrosse in the next few years. Are you ready with your itinerary?
I got it all on the calendar. All of his matches.
Very, very good. Well, Ben, we wish you nothing but more and more success as you continue wrestling and pursuing your studies in physical therapy. And I suspect you have all kinds of great things ahead of you. But in the meantime, we congratulate you on this stunning victory at the Junior Freestyle Nationals in the 285-pound class. And I thank you for telling your story so well. And I thank your parents, Pam and Rob, for joining as well in this morning show. It's been great to talk to you. And thank you again.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next week on The Morning Show, we have several interesting author interviews to share with you, including on Monday a conversation with Seth David Radwell, the author of a book called American Schism, How the Two Enlightenments Hold the Secret to Healing Our Nation. It's Seth David Radwell's contention that our country was founded with sharply contrasting ideas about what this new country should look like. And he believes that those contrasting visions stem from two wings of the Enlightenment, and that if we understand that better, we are in a much better position to understand the sharp divide which is part of American life today. Again, his book is American Schism, and you'll hear my interview with him on Monday's morning show. I'll also be speaking next week with Julie K. Brown, award-winning investigative reporter for the Miami Herald and the author of a stunning book called Perversion of Justice, The Jeffrey Epstein Story. Jeffrey Epstein is a billionaire who was convicted of sexually assaulting a plethora of young women, but given a plea bargain that was outrageous to just about all onlookers, and yet not really investigated clearly until Julie K. Brown did so. Her groundbreaking report ultimately led to a reopening of the case, and Jeffrey Epstein was sent back to prison. And Julie K. Brown's book is all about that incredible story. Also next week, we'll highlight for you the performances that are coming up next weekend by the Kenosha Opera Festival of Donizetti's delightful operatic comedy, The Daughter of the Regiment. We'll be talking to several of the singers who are involved in that performance. And we have tentatively scheduled for next week, for next Friday, a conversation with Dave Hallbeck, who is with the National Weather Service. We're going to be talking with him about what goes on at the National Weather Service on a night like we had a couple of nights ago when severe storms sweep through the state.